this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Morrow Fake Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Ricky on the board after a fight on a Kennedy, getting here because of an accident somewhere along the way. I knew you were in trouble.
That's right, man. It was a total mess. So if you're leaving the house right now and you're using the Kennedy, just be prepared, man. It's,
see, now the good news is, when I got on, there was nobody on it because they were all backed up by you.
Yeah, man.
I'm sitting there going, where's all the traffic? Oops, well, yeah, remember that accident I just heard about? Yeah, well, there you go.
Oh, yeah, man.
Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yes, we do.
Good morning.
What's up? How are you, bud?
I'm doing okay. Where I live, I don't have to deal with that kind of crap.
Well, when you only have one stoplight in town, it's kind of hard to have a big backup.
Let me count the stoplights in Edwardsburg. 1, 2, 3. There's two. Yeah, we probably have, I think it's 3.
Well, the what about the places in Vegas? Well, who was the guy who was the, was he the head of the Senate for a while? The guy, was it Harry Reid?
Yeah.
He came from a town in Nevada that only had a flag.
There was a stand-up guy, if ever there was one.
Well, you know, he's from Nevada. He was, his town had a flashing light, right? I don't think it even had a... One that changed. It was,
we have one of those too, but I didn't count that in the 3.
Well, you know, the some of the places, if you want to leave Clark County, which is where Vegas is and prostitution is allegedly illegal, the rest of the state it is. Some of the if you pick up the paper looking like for, you know, for the lounge shows and stuff, you'll see take a left at the flashing yellow light like 20 miles out of town and head to. You don't even get a stoplight. You get a flashing yellow. Whatever the hell that even means. When was the last time you were out in the country and saw a flashing yellow? I mean, there was a couple of them in Indiana. I know when we went to school, but it's been a long time.
Just yeah, saying. You see them. Like, I see them, you know, if I'm driving to Indianapolis and I'm going down Route 31, and there's, you know, that's getting systematically built out into, you know, basically the equivalent of an interstate highway, but there are still some sections of it where there's a crossroads, and so they have a flashing yellow light to just remind you that some car might want to go darting out in front of you.
Yeah. Well, there was a, you're talking about Route 31. It used to be the main street in South Bend. Now, of course, there's the bypass and all that stuff like that. When I don't remember who the hell's idea it was, Kevin, but it was really a horrible idea. Somebody got the hair up their behind idea to drive down to see Notre Dame play Indiana in my sophomore year. And that was the game they lost like 94-27 or something. It was the first night of Indiana's new stadium then. How many years ago was that? And I remember 31 was the main street of every little town all the way down there. God.
Well, and the big thing, and they've built a bypass around that, was Kokomo. And Kokomo was known as Stoplight City because as Ricky, have you heard of Kokomo, Indiana?
No, I haven't.
Okay, that's all you need to know about Kokomo, Indiana.
A lot of lights?
Heard of it. And they had 14 stoplights going through the city.
God. Well, you know, when
going
I was...
through this very small town, which the you know, the people who owned restaurants and gas stations kind of loved, because as you'd go driving through there, and you get stopped for the 11th time, finally, you know, some people would say, oh, screw it, I might as well just get something to eat while I'm going to anyway. I might as well just sit here and get something to eat while I'm stopped anyway.
Well, the phenomenon...
get some gas or get whatever.
The phenomenon, you know what else was like that? By talking about history, but it's somewhat of a development when you see, you know, we are, after all, stocks and jacks, and you look at some of the stock development. We used to drive, my Italian side of the family is from Columbus, Ohio. So if you want to get down to Columbus, you pretty much take Route 30 and then duck down into Columbus from there. Well, Route 30, when I first started going, when I wasn't even driving, we were real young, it was the main street of every town in Indiana, Warsaw, Plymouth, nice, great Indiana little towns, great school systems, great place to grow up, actually.
Was that Route 6? Was that US 6?
No, it was Route 30.
Oh, okay.
Route 30 went through all those little towns, and it was essentially the main drag. And all your businesses and so forth were on Route 30. And all of a sudden, they decided, okay, well, this is not working, so we're going to build these bypasses around it. So there would be what they would call Business 30 when you get to Warsaw. Yeah,
that was the old 30 that went through the city.
Yeah, sure. And then you could swing around the other one. Well, the other one was, like Kevin said earlier, it's almost like an expressway, except now that's where your traffic is. So lo and behold, that's where the Kmart went. That's where the Walmart went. That's where the Home Depot went, the dear departed Kmart. So all of a sudden, you ended up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stoplights, maybe more around there. And that's where all the big stores were, and in the central cities somewhat died. Or you got like restaurants and stuff like that. But to all the little department stores, they used to be down there. So whatever you do, Kevin, what is it? No man can do one thing, right? I mean, you think you're making this a... So now, if you drive by Route 30, it's probably still faster than going through the downtown, but not that much, because all of a sudden you've got... It's like Maryville.
Well, I get it, but why would anybody build a bypass that had stoplights on it?
Well, because somebody puts the Walmart there, and Walmart says, if you want the tax revenue, I need a stoplight. I mean, look at Maryville, for
God's
sake.
Yeah, but if you build a bypass, then you get off. They have exits.
Well, that's not the way...
Exits and exit ramps and things like that. So I sort of expected, you know, years ago, because it's been a little while now since Kokomo built the bypass, I half expected a lot of stuff to relocate out to, you know, one or more of the exits that are out there, that you would see at least a truck stop or, some fast food joints or something, so that people would jump off and fill the tank, get something to eat, whatever. And that just hasn't happened there. Kokomo is still its own little enclave down there, and you have to get off and drive up the road if you want gas or something to eat. And that's, you know, when I have a day trip to Indianapolis, which I do pretty frequently, Kokomo is usually a stop, you know, on the way back, where I just need to stretch my legs, maybe fill the tank or whatever. So, I've always marveled that they've managed to keep the expansion away from the highway.
Well, the pieces of property and the wealth that you create for those that are clever enough, smart enough, hooked in enough. It's interesting when you drive around the country, which I used to do more of, and haven't done in a while. Everybody is so different. I mean, in Illinois, for instance, there's more municipalities, cities and towns, than any other state in the union by far. I mean, by far. Cook County in Chicago, there's got to be how many cities and towns, Kevin? 40? 30? I mean, it's some huge number. It might not be that many, but...
Yeah, whereas when I lived in Milwaukee, you know, a city like Brookfield, I don't know how many, you know, a suburb like Brookfield, I don't know how many square miles it covered, but it was a lot.
Well, in Toronto, when they say Toronto is now as big as Chicago, we lived up there. My mother got married to my stepfather. He had a job up there, so we lived up there for a while until he found a job back here. So I went to first grade in Toronto, and we lived in a suburb called Don Mills. So I was going to go visit Toronto for business a while back, and I go, gee, I'm going to see if I can find Don Mills on the map. Well, I can't find it. Like, where the hell is Don Mills? All of a sudden, I see, like, Don Mills Road buried, like, maybe a third of the way into the city. Well, Toronto annexed all those suburbs.
They annexed it all. Okay.
That's why they are, you know, they don't have an Oak Park. They don't have a, like, a Brookfield, which is, you know, closer to to downtown than Mount Greenwood by far. But the wildest one, Kevin, I buy this truck down. My stepfather and mother died, so we're cleaning out the house. I go, here's a great excuse to go buy a truck, right? So I go buy one down in Tucson.
Yeah, because you always needed an excuse to buy one.
Oh, I know. So I buy this old junker down in Tucson. Well, plus I got to watch a ball game. And I figured I'll drive back on, you know, basically old Route 66, which is now all interstate. Never done that before. So, you know, road trip. So I'm driving back. And, of course, I stop in first stop is like Albuquerque. That's like 12 hours. And I get up, you know, usually I get up at the crack of dawn. So I'm driving and I get to Oklahoma City. You know, I probably left 4 o'clock, so it's still dark as hell. And all of a sudden I see this sign, Kevin. City limits Oklahoma City. I look around. I see like 5 jackrabbits, tumbleweeds. There's nothing there. They must have had, you know, an X out so damn far that there could never be a suburb. So finally, now it's getting time for coffee. And I pull in, the first exit, I pull in. Kevin, the place is alive. There's people there. There's trucks. And I just bought a pretty decent truck. My truck was the smallest truck in the place. These guys had these monster trucks. The McDonald's must have had 300 pickup trucks in there, guys getting coffee and sitting there and BSing. Maybe it was their breakfast spot. That McDonald's had to be, God, what you wouldn't pay for that thing. You know, those guys, I mean, I don't know what they did during COVID, but I'm telling you, that then there was like a Burger King and a few other spots, but the McDonald's was absolutely alive. You say, you get off on the exit, and everybody's there. It's pretty unbelievable. Hey, speaking about valuations, I know we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, but I'm going to just spot this in CNBC. If you want, we could put this off to next week, but I think it's pretty fascinating their estimate of what all the Major League Baseball teams are worth. And this is, well, you know what, I'll lead into it, and we'll decide if we want to go through this today or not, because it'll keep. But this is interesting, Kevin, for those of us that actually give a crap about stuff like this. But the baseball, the difference in P.E. ratios, average Major League, I'm always talking, as you know, probably to boredom, about some of these big stocks that have taken these hits in the last couple of weeks, and they come flying back, and they were down yesterday. No, we're up today, by the way. S&P futures are up 13, NASDAQ futures up 51, so we're making a little bit of a comeback here. Evaluations of the Magnificent Seven, you know, I look at stocks, not so much in P.E. ratio, because that can be kind of screwed up by how much you're planning for the future and things like that, but revenue to price, I always look at it as more of a tell, because you really can't, you know, if your revenue is like Cisco's was before the 2000 crash, stock was trading 65 and the revenue per share is 6. So you sit there and go, okay, even if it's 100% profit, which it's not, you know, the best you can do is 10, right? Which is probably, you know, anyway, so when you start to get 10, 11, 12 times revenue for a somewhat mature company, I start to get a little nervous, which doesn't mean the stock's going down. I mean, Microsoft, somehow, the size they are is still over 10. It's like 11. It was like 13 before stock came down a little. Well, I mean, I guess I'll ask anybody, how the hell does Microsoft double? I mean, for God's sake, we have to get another Earth for that to happen. But anyway, I'm looking here. You know, Kevin, the average Major League Baseball team has an enterprise value to sales multiple of 6.4. versus 10.1 for the NFL, 11.9 for the NBA, and 8.6 for the National Hockey League. That's relatively low, wouldn't you say? I mean, 6.4 is not big for essentially a monopoly, right? The multiple is lower for baseball because Major League Baseball teams have been changing hands at lower revenue multiples than all the U.S. leagues. Well, duh, that's how you calculate it. The last Major League Baseball team that sold was the Baltimore Orioles. In 2024, it went for $1.73 billion, or just 5.3 times revenue. What do you think of that?
I look at a lot of the operating cost as well. So as you think about it, it's not just what it costs to what the revenue streams look like, but also I would be saying, what does it cost to operate a Major League Baseball franchise? And so now we have to stack up their revenue versus their expenses. I don't know what the revenue model for pro football looks like, But I would imagine it's, I don't know if it's in the same ballpark as baseball or not. But the reason I say that is because you have the operating expense of a lot of travel and 162 games, and a roster size that's not as big as football. But then if you were to switch and say, well, look at basketball's operating cost, you only have the logistics that goes behind it of moving 12 players around. So you still have a lot of travel, but you have you have a much, much better cost structure. So that, you know, that would be my offhand reaction, or at least that's the question I would start asking is, okay, let's dig into their numbers. Because if you look at just the revenue play on there, I think you're going to miss a lot.
Well, the they claim, according to this, just one kind of offhanded comment, which of course now I dug down and I can't find it again. They claim a lot of it has to do with the, you know, whether or not the unevenness, inconsistency of this regional TV model.
Oh yeah,
I mean sometimes yeah, I mean it works in some places, it doesn't work in other places, and it says the Major League Baseball is facing revenue headwinds from the decline of the regional sports network model and concerns about national TV rights, particularly since February. I didn't know this, but you probably did. I don't know why we didn't talk about this. The ESPN announced it would opt out of its agreement after this season. I didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't, but I'm not really surprised because there's the collective bargaining agreement's up and there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to come next.
Well, here's the valuations, and actually this is a really nice chart. Who the hell? Kevin, I'm one of the few people left in the world that does one nice thing. See who wrote this article. We might as well say it since we're going to be quoting the poor guy. Michael Ozanian, a good Armenian. Michael Ozanian. There you go. But his chart he puts up here has all four, four, not just one number, like you would expect from some dodo. He's got four. He's got the value of the team, the revenue, the earnings, which, boy, you never get anybody, do you? And debt as a percentage of value. So this is some serious work this guy put in here. So my hat's off to him. And who the owner is, which is interesting. Who do you have as number one? I guess you probably get this. Who are the top five?
In terms of value?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have the Yankees in there and you're going to have the Dodgers in there.
Yeah, and this again, you know, Kevin, we did this for football. Remember how there were like pockets, there were like three teams at this number and then a whole bunch of teams kind of around the same number? Sort of the same thing here. These guys have the Yankees at $8 billion. But this is interesting. We have to get this guy on. It'll be a job for Ricky. Got the Yankees at $8 billion value, revenue at $705 million, earnings of only $7 million, and debt as a percentage of value of 1%. So maybe that's part of the value. The Dodgers, the value they've got them at $5.8 billion, so a lot less. The revenue is $701, so it's almost the same. The earnings are $10 million. They actually make more, and they got like 10% debt instead of... Now, why do you suppose they'd be worth so much less? Is it does the Yankees own... They don't own the stadium, do they? The Dodgers, I think, do. I don't know, it's hard for me to have a photographic memory and all this stuff, but...
It's not just what they own, but, you know, where in the franchise is it on the books, and is the methodology here accounting for everything? So, as an example, if you were looking at the Cubs, are they counting Marquee or not? Is Wrigley Field spun off as separate? Is all that property that they've acquired around the ballpark, including, you know, a lot of those rooftops where they get revenue, is that all built into the profit model as well? So I'd have to see a lot more. If you look at just the operations on their own, you're probably going to get something different than you would get if you're baseball operations than if you get the all-in.
Well, probably, but I'm not so sure you give away Marquee, but that's just me. The Cubs aren't playing it. That's talk about a wasteland.
Well, yeah, but it would be a factor either way. It might be a factor, on the revenue and expense side, but it might also be a loss factor.
Well, anyway, third is the red side. See how this, I guess what's got me kind of surprised, Kevin, is we look at those other numbers of the other leagues, and basketball. There were like three outliers. It was Golden State, the Knicks, and the Lakers were kind of outliers. And then you dropped $1 billion. Well, to go from $8 billion down to $5.8 billion is kind of a lot to the Dodgers. And then your next chunk down is the Red Sox at $4.7 billion and the Cubs at $4.5 billion. Now you've got the Red Sox at only $514 million in revenue, making $71 million. You got the Cubs with $528 million in revenue, only making $38 million. Boy, that's not much. It's what's a PE there? It's kind of a 15, you know, maybe. So that's, you know, it's pretty high. The Giants dropped down to $3.8 billion. They have more revenue than the Cubs. I would not have guessed that, would you? That their revenue was more than the Cubs, $533 million, and they make almost twice as much, $65 million. I'm not so sure I would have guessed that at all, would you?
Yeah. Hey, why don't you send over the article? I need to take a look at it and see.
All right. Well, I'll send it over to Ricky and then
up from there. But yeah, I need to see the methodology.
Well, there. I mean, I'm saying, but whatever it is, there are somewhat surprises in here. The Mets, according to this guy, lost $272 million. Mets revenue was only $446 million, and they got the highest payroll in baseball. What the hell? I mean, the Yankees and the Dodgers are like $200 billion.
And that tells me there's something not in the accounting. We're assuming that the Mets ownership aren't idiots, which may not be a
what is the Mets regional sports thing? They're not on the same as the Yankees, are they? I don't know.
The Yankees own theirs.
Yeah, I'm saying a lot of it, I think, has to do with that. I'll just run down real quick. But now there's a whole people bunched in the threes here. There's the Phillies at 3.2, the Mets 3.15, the Braves 3.1, Astros 3. Then you drop into the twos, which is the Texas Rangers 2.75. They got a new stadium, right? Angels 2.7, St. Louis Cardinals 2.5. St. Louis Cardinals revenue is $395 million. They make $34 million, so good for them. The Mariners make $56 million. The revenue is almost the same as the Cardinals. Then the Blue Jays worth 2.2. The White Sox, 2.15. The revenue is $315 million. And it's not so hot. And they lost $15 million. But here's the Athletics. They got them worth $2 billion. I don't know how the hell they had $275 million in revenue. And they made $3 million according to this. I got a question for you. Why are the A's playing in Sacramento and not Las Vegas? The minor league park is almost the exact same size, and the one in Vegas is the A's Triple A team. I would never have guessed that they wouldn't be there, would you?
Well, I wouldn't, except that I would say in Las Vegas the minor league team has dibs, at least for this year.
Well, but the Sacramento team's playing there too.
Make it work is the question.
No, but I mean the Sacramento team, the minor league is playing there.
Yeah, they're building a stadium for them, aren't they?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I'm kind of surprised that is their. When they first said they were going to play in a minor league stadium, I just assumed, because I knew Vegas, never assume, that Vegas had a Triple A team. I didn't know it was the Athletics team. I just assumed that that's the minor league stadium they were going to use. And when I heard the Cubs were flying to Sacramento, I'm going, why the hell are they doing that? I mean, it's kind of surprising. What would be more convenient than to use the minor league stadium of your own team, where if you wanted to move some guy up to the minors, all he's got to do is drive down the block, right?
Well, I can't argue with you. To know the reason, I would have to actually care enough about the A's to pay attention.
It's just a curiosity. I mean, the difference in stadium, actually the one in Sacramento is about 1,000 or 2,000 more. So maybe that had something to do with it. Or maybe, like you said, the schedules might have already been out and they didn't match. That's possible, too. Where they're building a new stadium, kind of near where the Tropicana was, aren't they?
I don't know where they're building. Like I said, for me to, I would have to actually care enough about the A's to know the story, and I don't.
Well, I mean, I could give a red's ass about the A's myself, but the whole choreography of we hate you guys, they hate us, fans are protesting, all this kind of stuff, we're leaving. Well, by the way, we want to stay for 2 years. No, you can't stay for 2 years. It's, you know, it. the whole interplay of the thing, I think, is kind of is somewhat interesting, I guess is all I'm saying.
The whole interplay of Oakland and their teams is interesting because they have, you know, longtime history of having teams in Oakland, and yet, you know, their teams seem to leave them. In the case of the Raiders, they leave them and come back.
Yeah.
They definitely have a weird dysfunctional relationship with their teams.
Well, do you think the Bay? I'm surprised the Giants are doing so well. But do you think there's room for two teams there? I mean, is Oakland? I don't know anything about how Oakland's doing the last 20 years, but is the city itself in worse shape than when, you know, Oakland was really good?
Don't know. Haven't been to Oakland. Been to San Francisco, but never went over to Oakland.
I went there once just because I flew out of Oakland. So we dropped the rental car, went across the Bay Bridge, and so forth. Anyway, Kevin, a lot of other stuff going on.
A little follow up with your conversation with Lou yesterday, and noodling about it. You brought this up in various ways, but one of the things that you said consistently yesterday is, well, that'll get thrown out of court. Well, that'll get thrown out of court, and I think the answer to that is, yeah, that's correct.
Oh, you're talking about the NIL
transfers, putting some limitations on transfers. The one thing that ought to pass muster is because the NCAA can impose restrictions on its member schools. They could very easily say you're going to pay. They'd probably make them pay into a kitty, but they're going to say, If you take somebody who has played at another institution based on how long they were at that other school, you're going to throw into a kitty, and the teams that lose players are going to get some money back. I could envision that happening in passing legal muster.
Well, the main, I won't even say disagreement, because Lou and I were, I think, agreeing on just about everything. A little bit more of a free market capitalism, shall we say. I don't think Congress needs to fix this. I
don't either. They would be the least of the places I would go for it.
I think you're going to end up with these teams. I mean, it looks to me, Kevin, if you put them all on a chalkboard, showing my age, they just have different goals for whatever reason. I mean, I think. The Big East, even though they like to have terrific basketball, they're a bunch of Catholic schools. They want to have a nice basketball program. They don't want to be the Bulls, I don't think. That there's people who seem to think that the education has nothing to do with anything, and we want to be the NBA's minor league. That those are two different, they're two different, whatever, directions. And in the NCAA trying to jam everybody into one, with a bunch of rules that nobody pays any attention to, or judges throw out every couple of weeks, I think the different conferences that are going to do things a different way should just write their own stuff up. And if you're going to go get a guy and you're going to invest, the idea that, I mean, I'll tell you what, if I'm sitting at the board of Miami of Ohio, which they never asked me to be, if I'm sitting there and I find out that we got Ricky Garcia, we spent 15 different private jets to get haul some assistant coach's ass out to his place and back and fly his mother in and every other damn thing. So it costs $100,000 to get him here. And by the way, we've had because he's a chub, we're going to have a nutrition person working with him 24 hours a day and a weight guy for 2 years. And all of a sudden, by the time he's a junior, he's going to be our starting left guard. And the day before he's going to play left guard, he says, I'm out of here. I tell you what, I'm getting something back for that. That's just me. It's the same model as...
And that's what we're talking about. I think if the NCAA likes its status quo for whatever reason, then that would be a way that they could do that, is to compensate for the movement.
Except, but I don't think... Maybe
because you're not going to be able to restrict, at least not directly, you're not going to be able to restrict player movement. It is just not passed muster in the courts yet, so...
Why,
I don't know why to start now.
Why is it any different than the example I used about MBAs and law schools and companies paying for them? Is the price went up and up and up? You owe them 2 years, or you owe them something back? I mean, why do we need the Congress or the president or whoever the hell, some god, not to make a slam on anybody, I'm just saying, why do we need to go to them for this rule? Why can't people just work it out themselves? Say, hey, Kevin, if you want me to pay $20,000 for your education for the next 2 years, you can't leave for another year or some. Why do I need somebody to make that happen?
Because the business model is that it's an extracurricular activity.
Well, I mean, so, it is now, but why can't the Big East?
Schools are going to have to turn them into employees if they want to do that. And so far, they have resisted doing that.
Well, somehow
they don't want all of the, all of the headaches that come with having them be employees. I think they're going, you know, that's another way they can approach it, is they, you know, that's they can finally give in and just go ahead and do it that way. But for whatever reason, they're saying that's not what we want to do.
Well, what about, you know more about contract stuff for me. You teach some of this stuff. What about you, Ricky Garcia, expects me, here's what I'll do for you. I'm going to give you tuition. I'm going to give you room and board. Give you weight training. I'm going to give you all this stuff that goes into a program, but you owe me 4 years. And by the way, if somebody wants you out of here before that, they got to pay me for you. Well, I mean, I don't see how that's why we need. I think what's happening, Kevin, and you've been more, I don't know if you remember, you've been more articulate about this than anybody, and how the NCAA makes virtually all their money on the NCAA basketball tournament. This idea in their mind that somehow we're going to jam, Sidewash State into the tournament, and they're all cheering to get into the big dance, and we're going to run them up against Auburn, which has, you know, $90 million going to 10 people. The idea that we're all just one big happy family together is so screwed up. There should have been a tournament for the 16 teams that are like that, or the 20 teams that are like that, and everybody else should place in another tournament, in my mind. I mean, and yet the NCAA doesn't want that. They want, this is where their money is, right?
Yeah, because they have 300-plus member schools that play basketball. So, yeah, so that's, they want it because, yeah, that's their revenue. And more, even more to the point, is like any bureaucracy, there's a power structure there, and power, bureaucracies give way very grudgingly because a lot of people's, basically their careers, their net worth, their self-worth, all of that stuff is tied up in there, and they don't like to go away. We see this in government. We get these bureaucracies grow up where they're not really intended to, but once you do try and make them go away, it's like trying to kill cockroaches. It just doesn't, it's not easy.
Well, I mean, we played in a
trying to kill cockroaches.
Well, I mean, I guess my point, Kevin, is I was trying to make with Lou, and I don't know if I did it very well, is that people can figure this out. They don't necessarily, someplace somewhere, if the guy from Shaka, whatever his last name is, at Marquette, who I actually think is a spectacular coach, but his view of the world is, we're not going to go crazy on this stuff. We're going to, maybe we'll pay some people like everybody else, but we're not going to start pilfering other people's people, and I don't really want mine being pilfered. He shouldn't have to play against the Alabama this year. I mean, we played, Kevin played on our softball team on the south side. We had a very strong neighborhood team with a bunch of family and friends, and we just happened to be pretty good ball players, and we had some people that were real good. But I don't think we belonged in the Let Us Entertain You League. I don't think we belonged in the Kelly Park A League, where it was a 500-hour wager every night minimum, and that, if you said you only wanted to bet 500, you were a chump. I mean, we didn't belong there, and we knew it. Right? I mean, maybe if we'd have got a couple other guys to kick.
Now, when I left you and started playing on the north side, we would play tournaments against those teams regularly, and then we were playing at a very high level, like the Portage Park League and so on.
Well, I ended up playing a lot of tournaments with them, but it was always with kind of a made-up team,
We always play with a regular team, and we could, we're in a position where, if we played them 10 times, we'd beat them 2-3 maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but then you're talking about,
and we did play often enough that we would not, and it was always fun. It was always, if you got like the defending, World Series champion, and you knock them out in the second round of the tournament, that was always great fun.
Well, I mean,
they come to play all day, and we send them home early.
I think I pitched against Lettuce when they were the best team I never pitched against the Bobcats, but I pitched against Lettuce a couple times, and you know those guys were so good, it was scary. But the thing of it was, Kevin, is your team or our team, even though both of us were pretty good, the team we had in Oklahoma was really good, but we weren't about to go get Mick Tallo a job so he'd pitch for us, where the Strikers did, because Mick Tallo could never hold a job. You know, we weren't going to have Benny Holt have been driving trucks for our company so he could play catcher. We weren't. That's the level I'm talking about, and that's the difference between Marquette and Alabama, in my mind, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like we couldn't all of a sudden have our best day and not let us off. We could have. I don't think he'd have bet on us to do it, but yeah. I mean, in any baseball game or softball game, you know, bleep can happen. But we're not. We didn't have six people on the team that we got jobs for just to play ball for us. It's just a different level, right?
Well, it's a different, yes, it's a different level of insanity.
Yes.
What it is.
But I mean, who the hell didn't want, I would have gladly given up my pitching spot to Mick Tallo, right, the best pitcher that ever lived, right?
Yeah, was it Mick or was it something that...
It was Mick, I think. But back when the, just for
that,
those people.
That doesn't ring true. Tallo does, but it doesn't matter.
But here was a guy that I think he drank a lot, but... Back when the bases were only 55 feet, I don't know when they went to 60, Kevin, maybe way early on in our career, this guy would drag back from the mound. He was so fast, he could get back to the second base bag and turn a double play, which nobody, so essentially gave you an 11th man on the field, which is so, plus the guy hit like, what, 700 or something?
He was a good hitter, and... you're right, a really good fielder, a really good hitter, and as pitchers go, and this is a hard thing in slow pitch softball, but it is really hard to be so accurate that you make it very, very difficult for people to actually hit the ball hard off of you, and it's all about placement.
Well, and it also has to do with, I mean, when I was younger, I was 6'4", we had a bunch of people in the infield that were like 6'3", 6'4". And if you had the quickness, back then I was no Tallo, but you move your infield way over and you leave a hole in the middle that looks as big as can be for the batter, and then you fill the hole. So if you pitch a really good game, you should get five or six balls back to you, where guys are trying to take an inside pitch, maybe to the right side, because that's where they see the hole, and all of a sudden, guess what? I'm standing in it. But I was nowhere near as good as he was at that. That the idea is to have your infield look like a big picket fence and there's no place to go, right?
Yeah, make people see all fielders. And then because it's 16-inch softball and it's really hard to really, really, truly launch it, except for a few people, you squeeze them on the outfield side and it just doesn't give you a good look for hitting.
So I rumor has it, since your university has to put this out there, that you've been... specifically right on the spoos every move this week, that the people are letting you know all these announcements, and now you're the wealthiest professor in Indiana. Is there any truth to that rumor?
No, actually it turns out that it's not true.
What the hell? I was hoping maybe, you know, I get a free lunch out of you or something, you know?
Yeah, no, still have the GoFundMe for my nursing home.
Oh, God. So what the... I looked at the CPI yesterday, and maybe I'll go through this a little bit more with Carl, but One thing I think that administrations left and right have all figured out, we can lie on the numbers. Now, the numbers came out yesterday. Again, I we've gone over this before, so Kevin, so it's not worth doing it again. But the unadjusted percent change month over month was 0.2%. The adjusted is minus 0.1. I don't something as simple as going out and finding what something costs and publishing it, I don't see how the hell you need an adjustment there, but that's just me. And sometimes it's the other way, but seems more usually it's to the downside. But we did have one month where it was to the upside. December to January was to the upside. The seasonally adjusted number was 0.5, and the real number was 2.4. So it's kind of sort of weird. But the two things that pop out are, and again, I wish I knew which week they're picking, was energy prices are way down and used car prices. Well, first of all, Kevin, used car prices, I got news for you, are not going down. the stuff I look for, they're not only not going down, they're not available, they got energy price down like some big number. The gas here in the last 3 weeks is up 50 cents. I mean, is that because they're shifting to the summer blend, or what are we doing here? But gas prices have not gone down.
I just paid $2.85 for it yesterday.
We're back up to $3.50 something here. We were down to $3.20, and it's gone straight up. So I don't know.
I was at Costco, so it was a bigger spread than usual. But I still think I'm trying to remember what it is. You know, at the non-discounted places, don't remember.
You should be doing, you and the listeners, you should be hustling out. Guess who was down? What was down 5%? Olives, pickles, and relishes. Now get a load of this. Olives, pickles, and relishes, sauces and gravies, salt, other seasoning, and spices. And then, after all that, what is an other condiment?
Other condiment?
It isn't sauces, gravies, olives, pickles, and relishes. Ketchup? Mustard? I got to believe it's in one of the other ones. Anyway. But these are the ones that are kind of sticking out. And it started to work its way through the list, Kevin, and then sort of didn't, is household stuff. You know, where we got apparel, we're trying to get to medical care. We still have medical care commodities are only 1% of the basket. Well, I don't know about that. And we have... buzzing down.
Well, it depends. What are medical care commodities?
Yeah, it's let's see, owner
rent, Band-Aids or aspirin or
I guess rent of primary residence was up 0.3%. Owner's equivalent rent, 0.4%.
So medical care commodities are things like syringes.
Oh, okay.
So medical care services. We're up 0.5%, 3% year over year. That's your doctors and your professional services and eye care and that kind of stuff. Hospital and related services is 3.9%. Inpatient is up 2% on the month, actually. Outpatient is up 0.7%.
Nursing. Well, one of the things that's especially amusing is they say food at home was only up 2.4 annualized, right, March to March. But 0.5% last month, which of course annualizes to close to 7, right?
Yeah.
It's exponential. It's not just straight times 12. But the other thing is that if you look in here, meats on the month, 1.5. All right. Now that's on the month.
That's a lot.
Well, it's going to be a lot if it keeps doing that, right?
Well, the background of this is in my day.
But by the way, that's not from tariffs, because almost all of that is produced here in the United States.
Right. When did my question?
Yeah, you know what? And just anecdotally, I have not at the grocery store. I haven't seen meats up at all. I haven't seen ribeyes on sale for a while, which is discouraging. It's expensive. It remains very high, like it has been for a long time for beef, for example. But I haven't seen the prices go up. I've just seen them hang out really high about where they've been for quite a while.
Well, what I've noted,
I don't know what that I don't know how that turns out for people like restaurants doing bulk purchases and everybody
else.
Well,
that's why you see your sliders now. A lot of restaurants are pulled pork sliders instead of. Yeah, little burgers, because pork's so much cheaper. Yeah,
right. Well, the other thing though that's interesting is that, so what I've noted over the last year or so is that the coupons and other discount deals on beef in particular, not so much on pork. I mean, like pork shoulders and stuff, they're still they go on sale with some regularity. But on the beef side, that stuff's essentially disappeared.
Oh yeah, yep.
So the effective cost, because see, the CPI looks at shelf prices. Okay, one thing that a lot of people don't understand is they pay zero attention to, nor do they take into account actual ticket cost at the check stand. So if you use a coupon, you're paying less than what the CPI says the increase is. And those have gone away. So that is a stealth inflation increase that does not show up in the CPI, but it is extremely significant, especially when you go from, like, you know, you've got, you know, chubs of, you know, 80-20 at, you know, at 3.99 with the coupon. They're 4.99 normally, but then the coupon disappears. Okay, that is a huge increase in reality, and yet it that's going to be an unch in the CPI report.
I have a question in terms of the delivery of these numbers. In my day, and maybe in your guys' day, there was no, the year over year was just an anecdotal sort of thing. The idea was if your inflation this month was 1%, you multiplied it by 12 because you cared about what stuff was going forward if this month was actually a number that became a trend. So if the last 2 months totaled 1%, you multiplied it by 6, so you'd say your annual inflation is about to be 6, sort of get ready for it. Someplace, and I don't know if it was Obama, Trump won, or Biden, somebody starts going with this trailing number, and now that's all everybody talks about. How did we manage this, whoever the he was, and I don't know who the hell it was, how did we manage to change this whole delivery? Because if we have a month next month, say the tariffs are bad, who knows if they're even going to go in or wherever they are, but say next month we get a number that's 1.5. Well, I got news for you. That's 18. It's not. I don't care what happened a year ago to you. I mean, but now all of a sudden, this is the way we deliver the thing.
Well, there's a number of things that happened. I mean, the CPI got gamed big time when Reagan was in office, and it was essentially rejiggered in the way that it's done. And of course, you know, we don't want to, you know, do something that shows that inflation is coming down faster than it really is, right? I mean, you know, the government would never want to do anything like that. But part of the problem I have with this is that, when there was a checkers union and you had gals at the front that were really good with mechanical cash registers, you know, no scanners, right?
You didn't want to Indian wrestle one of those ladies.
No, you didn't. And you know, what killed John Malik from IRI, he's the man who killed those guys. He killed that union and did it by putting the computerized scanners in, which at the time, the lasers were hideously expensive. I mean, it cost you over $1 million to put, you know, 5 or 6 lanes into a grocery store. And it was all because the computer was expensive, but the real problem was the actual check stand equipment. It was just, I mean, nowadays, you know, barcode scanners are, you know, $10, okay, but they weren't back then. So his deal was he'd pay for the equipment, but he got the data. That was the bargain.
Okay.
So IRI got the data, and then Nielsen got into it. And so you went from one company that did it, which was ICL Data Checker, then all of a sudden IBM comes out with the 4680, which does it, and NCR had theirs. And I used to write code, do network stuff in this industry, so I know a lot about exactly how all this happened. But that destroyed the checkers union. The thing is, though, at the same time it destroyed the checkers union, it made the ability to link the actual ticket price out the door available, because your UPCs, which of course were the key to scanners being able to work, were also tied in that back-end computer to the use of any kind of a coupon or other discount.
So you'll see it on your bill now. If they're two for the price of one, it'll be in there, $1.50, $1.50, and then it'll take the second $1.50 off.
Well, that's right. But Chief, see, that didn't used to be the case, because the gal used to, you know, ring everything, and then she'd put in, you know, minus 20 cents, minus 25 cents, minus, you know, whatever, yeah, right? Paper. And there was, and that was essentially never reconciled at the point of purchase. It was reconciled later, in that when you submitted those coupons back to the manufacturer for redemption, you'd better have bought at least as much of whatever it was you submitted back, right? Otherwise, you're trying to rob.
I have a kind of a general question regarding, before we lose Kevin. Kevin, why do you suppose, because we go over this with Carl every month, the labor stuff, And obviously we go over to the CPI, just so happens to be kind of talking to them today about it, because yesterday we were talking about other stuff, with the market going so crazy today. It's actually behaving. It's up 18, and the S&P is up 88. Why do you suppose the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and we go through this, when I say we, Carl brings it up every January, that there is some effort on the part of the Bureau of Labor Statistics to adjust for some outlier over an 18-month period or a yearly period. Yet in the CPI, I sort of see none of that. I mean,
there's no rebasing.
Right. Yeah, you can look at the. Were you on Kevin last week where I dug out from 2000 to today, the CPI has the price of everything up 80%. Okay, well, I could say the three of us in 10 minutes with Ricky's help on the computer could probably find stuff like college education, housing, cars, like you name it, you know, certainly healthcare, that's up at least three times, in maybe more, that are massive big ticket items. And not only that, I still have hospital care at 6.7% of your basket when it's 20% of the economy, Carl's always telling us.
Yeah, which is garbage,
yeah.
Right.
So why does the same group, and this is not a Democrat-Republican question, why does the same group not feel that they have to go back and say, wait a minute, we need to fix this? I mean, clearly the price of homes in the last 10 years is way higher than this owner equivalent rent crap, but is there just never going to be adjustment? It's never going to work its way through, or what?
Well, I told you last week, it's like six times the median income now for a home buyer.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Owner's equivalent rent was done deliberately as a way to take housing price inflation out of the CPI.
Right. Well, but
that's why it was done, Chief. It was. It wasn't an accident.
Oh, I get that. I'm asking you guys. This is, I guess it's more of a political question, maybe. If the three of us lived to be 100, and we're doing the show, are we still going to say housing was up, you know, 8% when it's up like 500% or what? I mean, there's not going to be any sort of adjustment.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing: if you actually And owner's equivalent rent is arguably the largest element of scamming in that. I mean, out of everything,
I'd say medical's higher.
But between that and medical care, okay, those are the two things that are especially stupid within that data. But if you put those two things in there as truthful reports on price change, which I mean, that's what the CPI is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a price index. Okay, if you put those two things in there, short-term interest rates would have to be 14%.
Okay, but I don't have the answer to this. That's why I'm asking you guys. Let's say, for instance, let's zero in on those, Kevin. I'd love your opinion because when you dash, then I can't get it. Let's say they're screwing with the shelter numbers, and they're screwing with the hospital numbers. Let's just lob that out there as a hypothesis. The way they're screwing with the shelter numbers is they have it as 35% of your basket, which is probably not that far off.
That's about right.
But what they're doing is they're screwing with the number. Now, the medical part, which they're doing it a totally different way. They're saying it's only 6% of the basket when it's really 20, and they're probably letting the number flow through somewhat accurately. But if you were to take, I mean, whenever I get a discussion with somebody about whether, recession and stuff, which I don't know if anybody can even define now. My point has been, and Kevin, you and I have talked about this, if you went back to 2020 and you moved the medical number up to 20%, or probably was 18% back then, I'm going to say that the average American has been in a depression or recession since 2020. Because if you use that number, that would probably take the CPI up at least, if it was 20%, I'm going to say it brings the CPI up every single year 1 to 1.5%, and if you did that and moved it into the deflator with our growth rate, I'm going to say we were negative virtually every one of those years. If I'm wrong, I'm not wrong by much.
I think that fits, that fits what we all observe very neatly. that you know, that people are, and that's, you know, Carl's had a really good way of wording it that's probably not appropriate for on the air, you know, about how we have just systematically and very intentionally screwed over a whole lot of people with, you know, with trade policies, with all kinds of things, you know, economic policies. And, you know, I guess we have a chance to fix it now if we pull it off right. But, as you know, it's especially a China problem. It's very especially a China problem. And yet I think, and when I tell you Wednesday, I think it's going to be very interesting to watch China try and respond to this, because on the one hand, she can't look weak, and on the other hand, he can't overplay his strength, because, you know, what's capital investment in China has just fallen off the table in the recent years. There's so many companies that are executing a get out of China policy in the first place. They're in a precarious position to start, and now it's going to be interesting to see how he, you know, tries to bail his butt out of it, and we'll see what happens. But I think this standoff now, right? Whatever else you think of the approach, whatever think you think of the people involved, is just going to be interesting theater to try.
Oh, without a doubt.
What the hell? Who manages to navigate the situation better?
But, you know, I'm all, as you know, I'm a fan of the, even though I argue with you guys all the time, I think 90% of the stuff we agree on. Before, my style would not be to blunder, but you know what I would really like, to be honest, and this, I know this is so academically screwed up, I would like from my days of listening to Milton Friedman and the free trade people and all the other stuff, and I actually listened to Bernie Sanders yesterday of all people talking about free trade and how in some areas it hasn't worked out and blah, 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 and how he's seen how he had. I guess I'd like to get a lot of the people on the show, because I think they're pretty darn bright, and a bunch of other people from, like, the Commerce. I mean, I'm not talking about 1,000 people because you can't learn anything. But I would like, you know, 15 people to go to somewhere, you know, I don't care where it is, for a weekend and just sit there and go, why hasn't this worked out the way people thought it would? Is it... Before we start, you know, pounding up on other countries and doing other kinds of stuff, is it political? Is it economic? They just have so many people that you can't have a union because somebody's waiting at the gate to come in for next to nothing. I mean, before I start causing about a lot of problems, I want to know why hasn't it worked out? Because in theory, not just in theory, it should have. Is it just because in the U.S. we were able to have unions, because when Roosevelt dropped the working age from 16 to 14, or 14 to, moved it up from 14 to 16, did that just take enough people out of the system to where unions were possible, and because labor got a little bit, was it all supply and demand? I mean, let me finish real quick. Okay. I don't know the answer. I mean, would the answer be telling Z, you got to have a law here that says people can't work before 16. I don't know the answer, but I'd like to know what the problem is. Why hasn't it worked? And I think every country's different. I really do.
No, Chief. The difference is the United States is unique. Okay.
Well, that could be. That's a real problem then.
The United States is unique, and the reason we're unique is that we actually, at least in name, enforce the concept of wage and environmental standards. Okay, now do people violate it? Oh yeah, all the time, right? But there is at least the possibility of getting caught, getting sanctioned, having your business destroyed, going to prison. All right. In China, look at the situation in the DRC with regards to cobalt. They literally have 10-year-old kids digging up the stuff.
Well, that's what
right?
I'm saying.
It's forced labor because the kids, their families, and the children are so poor that if they don't, they die.
I guess I'm searching for a solution. What you just said.
Well, now, the solution is to tariff the shit out of them.
Do we want to do business with anybody who lets people work under the age of 16? And the answer might be no.
No, Chief, and here's the other thing, okay? Fox News yesterday ran this article about, you know, how China could horse blank the United States by cutting off rare earth metals and selling all the treasury debt. Okay, this was this is Xi's nuclear option to, you know.
Did the person who said this, did they have any idea that probably the rare earth enemies they're working on elements or stuff we sent them because we don't want to process them here?
Well, there you go. By the way, what they said though in the article itself was had the element of truth in it that tells you exactly where the problem is. It says, here's the bottom line. If you want to set up a mine in the United States, we have this material in the ground, okay, in the U.S. It's not that we don't have any.
We actually got quite a bit.
Yeah, we do. The problem is it takes 20 years because every environmental group on the universe sues when you try to set this thing up. And by the time you actually get all of this done between the permitting and the lawsuits and everything else, it's 20 years before you actually have stuff coming out of the ground. In China, it takes 6 months because the government says, F the environment, okay? Yeah. F the labor standards, we don't care. And by the way, they finance it internally as well at the government level. So in 6 months, the mine's online. In the United States, it takes 20 years. Okay, now, we as a nation, after what we did coming out of World War II with the smokestacks and everything else, we decided that this kind of environmental destruction was unacceptable. And we also decided a long time ago that exploiting human beings for labor was unacceptable, which is why we have environmental and labor laws. And we have a bunch of people in this country, including companies like Apple, all right, who someone has now come up with a research report that says an iPhone would be $3,500 if it was built in America. The fact that that analysis came to that conclusion, assuming it's honest and it's not just scaremongering BS, okay, assuming it's real, what that says is the entire reason Apple has a consumer products business is because they destroy the environment somewhere else and they screw human beings.
All right, and now, which leads me to a question. You have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. Kevin has a problem with that. We have 330 million people in this country. How many of them just want their Apple for $1,000? And I don't give a rat's ass what happens in China.
Well, you know what? The whole point of having an elected government and a process to this, all right, is that we, as you, I, Kevin, and the rest of us, need to make clear to our government that one of two changes is going to happen, and if not, we're going to start removing heads and the streets are going to run with blood. And that is, you're either going to, everybody is going to play by these rules if you want to sell in America. You want to do this stuff over in China? Listen, China's a sovereign country. They can make whatever decisions they want. But if the product touches American shores or is paid for with American money, and we don't care how it got here, we don't care who it was transshipped to or what evasions were made, it's going to follow our rules. And if it doesn't, it's not coming in.
All right, so how,
end of conversation.
All right, so how popular? We also have, I'm just playing, people, I'm an economist. People do with their dollar votes.
Yeah.
If you and I, and we'll bring Kevin along because he likes to model blue jeans. If we had the world's biggest and best blue jean store.
Got to get those plus sizes in there.
got to get to the end of the rack. Somebody's got to model the end. My uncle used to say, go to the end of the rack.
Actually, I'm wearing a size blue jean I haven't worn in decades.
I think, Kevin, you've done pretty good for yourself. But I'm saying, if we put this one up and we have on sale blue jeans, $30 from God knows where, the best, most pristine blue jeans in the world. All the cotton's here. All the stuff's here. We didn't pollute a river. Renewable energy, by the way, at $120. Do you think we sell a pair?
No, but unless the only option is $120.
So,
here's the thing. If you're going to allow slavery and you're going to allow...
I didn't say I wanted to allow it. I never said
no,
that.
No, I'm saying if you're going to allow slavery and despoilation of the environment, okay, if you're going to allow it, then you either allow it everywhere or you allow it nowhere. And if we have a set of standards that says it's not acceptable, then we have
I hope you think I'm not dumb enough to think that if you put pollution in the air in China, it doesn't affect things here at some point. I mean, I think I do.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you either, you know, this is what I have a problem with the left, okay, in this country. The left, Black Lives Matter, right? Human rights for everybody, including people who break the law coming to the United States. All these things are absolute values that we will not compromise on. They are absolutes, and we elect people from this. We don't even care if they can actually fly an airplane or if they can reason their way out of a paper bag. They're competent enough to be a Supreme Court justice. We see this kind of thing constantly. All right, fine. If that is your set of standards, then you have to be willing to enforce them against everybody without fear or favor. And if you're not, then you need to shut up, because all you're really doing is screwing Americans so you can make a buck. And I'm tired of that.
I can tell you stories of stuff in Chicago here. One of Audrey's best friends, one of her friends, nice guy. He's 80-something. But he used to work for Kevin. You remember these guys? Well, you still go up. Matter of fact, I didn't get it, but I just bought a water heater. I didn't buy a Rheem. Rheem Water Heaters was a construction place. They're still, Carl, if you're here, if we ever drive down south, drive down Kenzie, I'll say, you see that huge piece of flat ground that used to be Rheem
manufacturing? That used to be a water plant.
Used to be Rheem manufacturing.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of the football players wanted to work there in the summer because you had to pick up the water heater and dump it in the box. Talk about God.
There's a good workout.
It was a workout.
That's a good workout, yeah.
And all of a sudden, these guys decide to leave. Now, you might say the wherever they were going, Mexico or someplace, the wages were cheaper there. You might say that, and they probably are. I'm sure they are. Well, you also might say, They had an awful lot of people here that had paid into, or they had paid into, a retirement plan. They had the old style retirement plan.
And all of a sudden they wanted to evade that.
Yeah. They wanted to evade that and said, we're going to offer you essentially a transfer to, I don't know, if it originally was to a state down south or to, it might have been even to Mexico. And if you don't come with, you refuse the transfer, you don't get your pension or something along those lines. I mean, all these steel companies totally screwed the workers there. They're all with the steel companies. Supposedly had all that money. Like, I mean, you're always Mr. Enforcement, Carol. Where was all that money during the ERISA laws that these companies were supposed to put in these pension funds?
This is the basic problem, right? You know, it's the way these laws are structured. When I ran my company, if you want to deduct health insurance premiums from your corporate taxes, okay, above the line, which, oh boy, if you don't,
oh yeah,
bend over, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You can't, you can charge a individual or a family premium, but you can't individually rate people. And yet, on the actual employer writes the check to the insurance company, everybody is individually rated.
Sure they are.
And, oh, by the way, guess what this means? This means the 19-year-old kid who's working for me in tech support that has absolutely nothing wrong with them, all right, he is essentially cross-subsidizing the 45-year-old woman that's on 6 medications.
Except when we were young, the price was such that you didn't mind that deal. And now that we got old...
Wait a minute. Be careful with this. It's way worse now. Okay, way worse.
What I'm saying is, when I was young, I knew that mine didn't cost that much, okay?
But you knew that yours didn't cost that much, but what you probably didn't know is that the woman who was sitting next to you and was in her 40s was 4 times your cost.
Well, when we first started PTI, we had a lot of people. You needed more people to run a brokerage firm back then. We were stuck with guys that weren't young and like 3 women of childbearing age. Could we have gotten any worse?
That's about as bad as it gets, yeah. believe me, I used to write these checks. I know exactly how bad this is.
But you know what the cost was for somebody young? I mean, when I first started, I started First Option. Well, my clearing firm was First Options.
Chief, we had very good coverage, and it was under it was $80 a month.
You know what I saved up $10,000, I put in an account, and I had my badge. The second time I ever saw the floor, I had a badge on, which like nobody ever did, right? But I had another job. I mean, I wasn't gonna come down here for 6 months, become a runner just to see things how it worked. So anyway, I get the first options before I even gave them my first. They didn't make any money on me unless I made a trade. They charged a buck a contract for on the floor back in those days. So they paid for my insurance. And after a year or so, I started doing a lot better. I hired a clerk, and he had a wife and three kids.
Oh.
And it was 75 hours a month was my cost.
Yeah. And you know, when I used to cut these checks. We had people that were under $80. Okay, but then I also had people that were, you know, were five times that. And it is what it is. But this is the thing. I'm prohibited by law under ERISA from individually rating and taking individual separate deductions from each person.
No, but what you could have done, and
there were ways around it. Okay?
You don't even, I know you love to rant off on the what do you want to call them? The networks that these insurance companies have?
Yeah.
And the difference in prices at hospitals, which I mean, nobody's ever going to argue with you about that. It is crazy. One of my first clients, boy, what a character. He ended up expatriating, by the way, because he didn't like Clinton. Actually, he expatriated because of, what do you call laws? The laws when you croak. Estate taxes. He didn't want estate tax. He left because of estate taxes, which is another thing that our country does, or at least used to do, where what you need to do is you need to, if you have this kind of money, and if you have these kinds of possessions, I know I'm wandering off here, but it might be interesting. You need to go find, even at an older age, you need to get yourself a life insurance policy of whatever the worst thing they can do to you. And if it's you and your wife, the last person who's around. Because what would happen is, and his specific issue was, when they moved out to Arizona from Indiana, his wife befriended this Indian artist. And he's just a guy, right? Does some paintings, does some stuff, sculptures. And she would buy the stuff from him because she thought the stuff was like really good. And she really liked the guy. So all of a sudden, the guy becomes a name. And they probably have got 50 pieces of this guy's stuff. And this guy, CW, gives his name, but not anything, won't be able to find him. He's now terrified that some bleep from the IRS is going to come in and say, gee, artist X, whatever the guy's name was, everything he does, everything he's ever done now is worth $250,000. And by the way, you've got 55 of these things. And your estate's going to be X. Well, if you don't have the cash, you are absolutely screwed. And I tried. He said, the only way I can get around this is to expatriate. I said, no, you don't. I actually found him like a $70 million life policy. I don't do life business, but I didn't really want the guy to leave. He was a really good friend, and he was a great client on top of it. But he said, no, I'm out of here. And he got his citizenship on the Isle of Man, of all places. We didn't want to live then, so he became a resident of Bermuda.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
Which is really hard to do. So when he gets to Bermuda, guess who his neighbors are? That already had their escape hatch. Who's the Ross Perot and his son or two, or the houses around? They had already had their escape hatch. One of the guys was running for president, for God's sake. Kevin, you can't write fiction like this. I mean, so anyway, but you know, the worst ever. You guys never remember this. Years ago, I talked about it on the show. The worst abuse by the IRS I've ever heard about. Some guy had a peregrine falcon that was, I was never into taxidermy. I don't want to shoot anything, and I don't want to see anything stuffed around me. This guy had a peregrine falcon stuffed by this incredibly world-renowned taxidermist. I wouldn't know a taxidermist if it kicked me in the ass. But so the IRS says, that thing's worth $1 million.
Oh.
But then it was on the endangered species list.
Yeah,
You can't even sell the stuffed bird.
You can't sell it, right?
So they gave the guy a bill for $1 million, and he couldn't sell it at all, much less for 50 cents. I'm sitting there going, really? Our government just did that to somebody?
Oh, no, what you do then is you take out an insurance policy on it and then have a fire.
Well, I guess so. but I mean, some of the stuff that we do here is, but I'm saying I'm agreeing with you guys on the but I also think that this is way more complicated, and then you and I and Kevin all, I would want a list of 5 countries, and I'd say, okay, what are the abuses? I mean, some of the abuses are going to be economic, in a sense that people are going to work for less. In a right. country that has way more people and less natural resources and less stuff, no other opportunity. But now, I don't mind if people work for a little less. I don't want somebody 10-year-old working. And what did Michael Che say on Saturday Night Live last week? How do you tell somebody 11 years old you're laid off? I mean, it's kind of funny, but not really, right? So I think every one of these places, and to a certain extent, the comparative advantage of, quote, a Vietnam is they have a lot more people with basically nothing else to do than we do. But our competitive advantages, we got a lot more land per person, we got a lot more resources per person. That's what makes us. So I don't think somebody just having a slightly or somewhat less labor rate is necessarily something they're screwing us with. Now, if they got people 11 years old working, well, now that's a different story, like you guys have been saying, right?
Right. Well, and this again, you know, this is kind of the situation that, you know, that things go on from this standpoint. There's so much. It's not simple, okay, but at the same time it is, because the biggest abuses come from this area. And this latest, you know, the thing that I think is so interesting about this whole Chinese situation in particular is just the number of people that have made one-way bets forever. And now all of a sudden, when someone's forced to unwind it, there's already rumbling out there about how the Federal Reserve is going to come in and prevent hedge funds from getting hammered because they were, you know, the latest scam, Chief, before 2008, what made 08 such a mess, beyond the stupidity of companies like IndyMac and WaMu, okay? But by the way, IndyMac, with help of the government, committed bank fraud. This was proved. The guy in the government who was involved in it, they were backdating deposits, so they didn't violate reserve ratios, because if they had done that, they would have had to liquidate the portfolio, and, oh, well, you know, bad things would have happened to your stock price, right? I flagged this problem at Washington Mutual a year and a half before it blew them up.
Well,
because they were paying.
Carl, how about we go to break and we come back? Let's keep working on that, because
I'm going to give you a comment before break, and it's just real simple. What everything we've described has been an ethics issue with a lot of businesses, and our problem is not only is it rewarded, it's there is no price to pay for it.
That's right.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
To pay for it. And that's a political issue, that is a media issue, and of course, you know, because they're all advertisers on media, they, you know, media is not going to call them on it, and, you know, so very structurally, we don't exact a price out of people for going places like China to source materials,
yeah,
and therefore it just keeps going.
Well, you're going to get no argument there. Wait a minute, the three of us agreeing? What the hell? We better
go. Yeah, I'll get the hell out of the way. We can't have that continue.
Can't have that continue. We'll head off to SP Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 96. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Ricky on the board. We have Carl with us. Kevin just stuck around, which is good, and now he's dashed off to do some teaching. SP Futures up 15. We'll make that 26. NASDAQ Futures up 99. Dow Futures up 91. We're moving up here a little bit. We've got interesting stuff here in a lot of areas, especially with the energy and the gold and stuff. We have individual stocks. In the Dow, we've got American Express up 240. JP Morgan, they've had earnings up 239. Microsoft up 397. Virtually all the big seven, except for Apple. Apple's down 22 cents, 190. All the rest of those guys are up. DAX down 274, 1.3%. FTSE up 39.5%. CAC around down 31.4. So far, not the craziness of the last few days. I mean, kind of, well, when we start to get to the point where a percent and a half move is considered calm, I guess we got a problem with that. But Nikkei down 1,003%. Hang Seng up 232, 1.1%. Shanghai up 14.4%. Bonds. Now, these guys were heading straight up, and allegedly, the reason that we're getting, now who the hell knows, the reason why Trump backed off on these tariffs was the interest rate running up like it was at 10-year and 30 kind of spooked them. That appears to be the story, but how the hell does anybody know? 10-year up 4 basis points, 4.43. The Bund down 7 basis points, 2.51. Japan down 9, 1.28. I think those guys got up to almost 1.5, now they're down to 1.28. We got oil up 7 cents, but still $60. And I'm not seeing it at all in gas around here. Matter of fact, gas is going up as oil is going down. Brent up 7 cents, 63.90. Natural gas down 15 cents, 3.40. That was $4 not that long ago. RBOB up a penny, 1.97. But RBOB has been $2, 2.02. Even with the oil falling like this, RBOB has not dropped really hardly at all. Gold, another $59, 32.37. Blowing through a 3,200 like dinner through a goose, for God's sake. Silver up 70 cents, 31.46. Copper up 9 cents, 4.43. Foreign exchange, well, the dollar has been getting hammered. The euro is up to 113. It was like 108 something maybe 4 weeks ago. Carl, the British pound, 131. We haven't seen that high in a while either. So we have Bitcoin up 2,700, 82,317. Yesterday is a quick review. Dow was down 1,000, S&P down 188, NASDAQ down 737. So at 3 or 4%, they almost seemed blasé. But I tell you what, up days, down days, and 3% does not normally indicate a healthy market, but who knows. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? No baseball, off day.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 39 degrees right now with a high of 47. Chilly, but plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be clear with a low of 37 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 69 degrees right now with a high of 102. Mostly sunny and very, very hot. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. But tonight will be clear with a low of 67 degrees, so nice and warm. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe, looking at 31 minutes. 49 minutes, Iman Ines from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. Lastly, Iman Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. Let's talk about sports a little bit. Hawks beat Bruins yesterday in the NHL, 5-2. Today we got Wizards at Bulls at 7 p.m. and Spurs at Suns at 9 p.m. Yesterday, the Guardians beat the White Sox 6-1, and we got a couple games today. Red Sox at White Sox, 6:40 p.m. Brewers at Diamondbacks, 8:40 p.m. Lastly, Cubs at Dodgers, 9:10 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Colin, the stuff that we constantly talk about, it all really comes together. The economic, the law, the essentially people buying people out, even the, you know, the media, and everybody, of course, you know, rags from one side to the other about the media. But the simple fact is, as a country, almost collectively, we no longer want to say, Carl, you run the Chicago newspaper. By the way, 3 million people are going to pay 50 cents a day for the newspaper. And we want you to go out and hire some reporters. We want you to print the news. Nobody wants that. Everyone wants it free. Everybody only wants to read the guy they agree with. They're looking for affirmation, not information. Somehow, I guess my question is, and it's a tough one, is what we see and the things that we complain about, are those the problems, or are they the reflection of what we've become?
Well, I think it's some of both. And again, if you're television very early on adopted the name programming, which is an entirely accurate description. Right, guess what they're programming.
Well, see, I mean,
this is kind of like, this is a thing with medicine.
Well, but okay,
they
they
practice medicine. Guess who they're practicing on?
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, but this is the thing, is that, and oh, by the way, computers, and you know, I mean, to some extent, I'm personally responsible for this because I, you know, this is what I've done my entire life is data processing of various sorts, right? I mean, that's, you know, started writing code before I could drive, and yet here we are. When you can take this kind of thing, you look at it, and I've written a couple articles about this. The whole thing with social media, people think it's about being able to, you know, post cute cat pictures. Okay, I assure you, Meta is not worth what they're worth because you can look at pictures of somebody's pretty cat. Okay, Meta is not worth what they're worth because Kraft wants to sell you ketchup or Heinz. Okay,
yeah.
That's not why they're worth. I mean, you know, advertising, and you know, you ran. What'd you buy the Sunday paper for? Well, for, among other things, the ads and, you know, the auto, you know, the coupons and things like this, right? I mean, that was the thing with the Sunday paper. It was huge.
What you didn't you didn't know is the ads were paying for you to buy the paper at the price you were paying it for.
Well, but I'm saying that, you know, the Sunday paper was five times the size of all the rest of them, right? Because of all that advertising.
Okay. And the price you paid for it was probably a third of the price it cost them to produce it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the rest of it was being. But here's the thing. There wasn't, you know, when I used to buy radio advertising, and we bought some for MCS when I ran the company, we could target it by time of day. So, you know, drive time was one of the more expensive day parts you could purchase.
It was like $250 an hour of spot versus like 30.
Yeah, well, but that's because people were in their cars and had the radio on.
You know what the time?
Okay.
You know what the highest, I don't know if it still is, when Jen and I were on the score, the highest, things have changed a little bit. The highest, the 1 minute has the most people in their cars during the day.
Hmm.
It's like 7:08 in the morning.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I believe that.
And at that point, there was like 260,000 people in Chicago in their cars. And this is 15 years ago.
Yeah, and this is, but I mean, you know, and of course, that's how the pricing is, right? I mean, you know, do you want to reach 250,000 people potentially that could have the radio on, or do you want to reach, you know, 5,000 people?
Plus, if you're in a car, you're not going anywhere. It's not like you're at home and you can, I mean, the car, you're stuck.
Well, you got something to, you want something to do, and if you're by yourself, you turn the radio on, right? I mean, now, everybody could, I mean, I don't ever listen to the radio, even though my cars have working radios. I have my own music on a stick, but that was not.
No, but in Chicago, you're still listening to radio in the car because you need your traffic weather. You want you need your sports. Yeah. You need whatever you want. You need the news.
Right. And that's the thing is that, but Meta makes their money. X makes their money. All these companies make their money by funneling opinion, by creating a reality that somebody pays them to create. That is where the money that's why they're worth that kind of money. And it is all about driving you. It is not about informing you. It is not about you putting up cute pictures of your cat. It's not about, and computers are very, very good at sifting data. That's what they do better than
anything
else.
And people do not realize how gullible they are.
There's not artificial intelligence is absolutely artificial. It is not intelligent. It's a data sieve, but it's a very, very good one. And it is simply the refinement of what has been used to abuse people. And as storage gets cheaper, and that's really where the revolution is.
Well,
been.
It comes down to people.
Power.
It's been a process. When I was younger, you know, the Vietnam War era was I mean, you had your networks, of which there were only three, and then you had a local station or two. Most cities didn't even have a local station. I mean, you were blessed if you were in Chicago with Channel 9. We had your sports and your kids' shows and all other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But the networks, and they competed for ratings, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They essentially gave up the 6 o'clock to 7 hour, or was it 5 to 6, wherever you were. They gave up that hour essentially for news. And it was news. For, I mean, there might have been a little bit of, but really, Walter Cronkite was not there to teach you to be a Democrat or Republican. I mean, that was not his game. Neither was Harry Reasoner or the people he competed against. But now, anybody who thinks for a second that CNBC is business news, they're looking for advertisements, they're looking for interviews. You can't be a news station. Okay, they're a news station in the sense that you can turn it on and see where the spoons are trading. Other than that, it's all about getting people there. It's ratings. It's a show like everything else. I mean, I got and who you listen to, I actually saw this. You know, everybody writes into this Quora Digest, and I talk about it once in a while, Carl. And the guy was talking about he's a farmer from up north near the Canadian border. And evidently, the town he's from, the county is very right-wing. They're all Trumpers. And he says he was in the local bar the other night, and everybody's bitching about Trump, pretty much. One guy's daughter had gotten fired in some health and human services thing, and somebody else. I didn't vote for this guy to hire
to do
Elon
that,
Musk
right.
and this and that. Plus, I ship half my farm stuff to Canada. The last thing I want to do is lose that. But the point is, the guy says in the article, he goes, honestly, they don't know. And he goes, they're not bad people. He goes, in the bar, he goes, most bars, when you go into, you would have sports on three different channels. Every TV in this bar is Fox News. Because it's all they listen to.
Right.
And, I mean, I go into, I have a terrific significant other, and she likes to listen to Newsmax. I listen to it for about 30 seconds, and I go, this isn't news. What is this? This is some diatribe. And then I like to go to the YouTube. I've been seeing some good stuff on YouTube. But then there'll be something about, Trump's this. And then I realize it's from CNBC. Not CNBC. It was MSNBC. Oh, yeah. I turn it on. I listen to the five-minute piece for 2.5 minutes, and I go, there's no facts in here. It's just some BS.
And right.
There's nothing in there other than trying to change my point of view to whatever theirs is without even giving me a fact or two to help with the law. So you look at one side of it, I'm thinking, how could anybody zero in on one side or the other and think they're actually getting news here? But now, if I were to say, if you and I were to say, we're going to, the guys in the Sun-Times are doing a pretty good job, but we're gonna invest a lot of money in the Sun-Times, and we're going to turn this into a serious, we're going to hire a city desk, we're going to hire, guys that actually go out and do the homicides, we're going to put some people in Washington, and it's going to cost us X. So, by the way, the Sun-Times is 75 cents a day. I don't think we sell a paper, you? Everybody's going to bitch about the news.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the kind of thing that I look at as time goes on, and I say, how does any of this ever get addressed? Because the reason we have allegedly the rule of law is so everybody has to essentially play by the same rules. Okay, if you're going to have any kind of fair competition, any kind of markets that mean anything, where you actually are competing and good ideas win, bad ideas lose. Over time, this tends to improve everybody's wealth and everybody's access to goods and services. Because and by the way, that's called productivity, and it also makes the cost in real terms go down. Right? This is a good thing for everyone. But if you're going to have that, you can't have what's going on right now. This thing that supposedly spooked Trump. With the tariffs.
I thought it was the interest rates, but that's what I read.
I'll tell you what's going on here, because I saw this dislocation in the data in the markets. I watch currency crosses and all kinds of stuff. I've got all these things up on my screen at one time. The Treasury complex, everything else. What is blowing up, and I don't know if it's, we'll see if it's calmed down some today, but during those couple of days, it was the basis trade that was unwinding. And this is, again, this goes back in 2008, the early part of 2008. I wrote an article. I don't know if I sent this one to you. I sent the other one from the open letter to the president. I sent that around to the list. But I don't know if I sent this one out or not. But this is, again, from 2008. And I said, look,
The bottom line here, right, what made 08 so destructive was the credit default swaps and the off-exchange trade in those things, which had no margin supervision. And as a and the whole reason is because they were direct counterparty things. So you and somebody else agree to do some kind of transaction. There's nobody in the middle. Chief, you know, because you've traded in the pits, okay, and you trade the markets every day. The entire reason this crap doesn't happen after the 1929 crash in regulated markets is because the Exchange Act essentially put the exchange in as the guarantor of every transaction on the other side. So you
they
do not...
The, they put the clearing corp.
Well, yeah, but for all intents and purposes, you do not... You know, if you sell a put, you do not know who bought the put on the other side. If I sell a futures contract or I buy a futures contract, I don't know who the other party actually is. Now, if you're in the pit, you may know who you traded.
What you're saying is you don't have any counterparty risk.
Well, the reason is the exchange and the clearing company are in the center. They take that risk.
All right, give me one second to describe the world before that. There used to be called a put and call exchange.
Yes.
And it's very similar to gambling, right?
I mean, not
in the sense that if I bet on the Bears and I get 6 points to Carl, and then Kevin has got 8 points going the other way, and I make a corresponding bet with Kevin, I think I'm flat, but I'm not.
You're not, because
you're not.
The other guy
yeah.
might not be able to pay.
But you know, but one thing you're heading down this direction. But let me interject one little extra thing there. When you trade. If you open up an account at PTI or any place and you buy 1,000 shares of IBM, which today is up 95 cents, 230, 50, and all of a sudden tomorrow it's down 10 bucks or it's up 10 bucks, we don't, unless we're Bernie Madoff, which we're not, we don't mark it. You have an independent person that marks that, meaning the
That's right.
DTC. So if it's up 10 bucks, guess what? You're up 10,000. If you're down 10 bucks, you're down 10,000. We don't get to determine that. And oh, by the way, neither do you. But
well, yeah, but see, Chief, here's the thing.
But okay, but let me just run this about about how I think part of the issue, what you're talking about, Carl, is it's also we not only have a failure in law enforcement. I think we have a serious failure in whatever the board system at companies. Now, what happens is why does say was it WAMU? I saw. And I didn't know what to do with it, to be honest with you, Carl. They sold mortgage insurance on like 40% of the entire state of California.
Yes.
And when you look at do I have enough time? I need at least a minute for this, Carl. What essentially is a credit default swap? Is somebody essentially given an insurance on something? Now, if for instance the U.S. rate on bonds is 7%. Okay, but I noticed that Sicily, well, not Sicily, but say Crete, is 10%. All right, well, if there is a market, the difference between the 6 and the 10 should reflect the risk in a competitive marketplace, correct?
Right.
So, but if I say I'm going to buy these Crete bonds at 10, and I'm going to go to, you know, pick a place, WAMU or Goldman Sachs or someplace, or Merrill Lynch, how much to guarantee my bonds I just bought from Crete? And they say, gee, that'll be 2%, 2.5% of the bond. Now, in the first place, does Merrill Lynch have enough money to guarantee the country of Crete? That's question number one. And question number two is, why shouldn't their price be 4%? Should be right. The market difference, right? But now, what they did... And this, none of the, I don't think any of these people, maybe one guy, because the guy Merrill Lynch didn't. Was it the F-American dude who ran Merrill Lynch? They say our model says that it should only be 2%, and we just charge this Jamoke Tom Howe 2.5%. So we're taking 0.5% into profit today, even though it might be a 10-year insurance policy. And
right.
Then all of a sudden the board says, gee, this Tom Howe guy just made us $5 million last month. He needs $1 million bonus.
Right.
So I walk out fat and happy while my company goes down. This is insane, Carol. This had nothing.
Well, Chief, it was even more nutty than that. within the regulated world of the banks, which suppose, you know, the FDIC and the OCC and OTS.
Those guys do nothing but chase yesterday's problem, not tomorrow's.
Here's the thing. And you know, this was when Bear was you know, in charge of this, right? She was the head of the FDIC at the time. Prompt corrective action is a law. And it says that those regulators shall prevent the violation of those ratios. Okay, it does not say may, right? It says shall. And when WaMu, in the early part of 07, one of the very first columns I ever wrote in my blog, and what actually inspired me to start writing the blog, was that WaMu comes out after the first quarter of 07, and in their earnings, their quarterly report, they are paying out in dividends more money than they actually had in cash earnings. And the reason they were...
Which is supposed to be illegal, but I think there's some law that says every quarter, if you give 30% dividend a quarter and one quarter for some reason you make 29, I think you can still do it. I don't know how you get around it.
Chief, the way they were doing it was they were basically paying the dividends out of capitalized interest on negative amortization loans.
Cool. All I can say about that is cool.
Well, that works until it
blows
you up.
Yeah, until it does it, yeah.
And it will blow you up, right, if you keep doing it for any length of time.
But then the question is, who's you? If you're the executive and just left with $30 million in your pocket, you're not the you.
Well, I'm just saying. What led me to start writing the column and called BS on the entire thing and that it was going to blow up in everyone's face was that event. All right, now here we are with this basis trade. Okay, and the entire point of these trades is simply that if a hedge fund goes into the regulated futures markets or into the stock market and starts doing things on margin, which is perfectly legal for you, I, or anybody else to do, they have nightly supervision of their margin requirements, or in a fast market, maybe even more than nightly, right? Because the clearing firm is in the middle of the transaction, and if they don't do their job, there is no way they can cover a default. They don't have enough capital to do it. Well, and so they're not going to allow that to happen because it's their very existence.
Okay, but I don't want to go into this in major detail, but there's a big difference between if somebody has a margin loan here at PTI because they bought 1,000 shares of IBM and only sent us a check. We don't do a lot of that business, but that's essentially what a lot of the other places,
right.
That's how they make their money, is the interest on that.
Right.
Okay,
that's why
they're more than happy to charge you no commission because they're gonna.
By the way, that's why at most of those places the interest on margin loans is like five times what you can get in.
Oh yeah, yeah. But now on the security side, that margin is yours. It has nothing to do with PTI or RBC or IP.
Right.
But now
that's
on the futures side, the firm. They look at all the clients, and they look at all the client's position, and that's what the firm has to post. It's big difference. It's, big difference.
Oh, no, I understand that. But the point is the same, which is that the entire... So the trade, in order to get around these limits in the lead-up to the 08 crash, was in the credit default swaps because they were off exchange, and there was no margin supervision. The trade now... That's off exchange, that has no margin supervision, is this damned basis trade crap. Okay? And oh, by the way, that is unwind. And I saw this because there were crosses. Look, during the middle of the worst of this, places that had absolutely no cross trade exposure, municipal bonds were getting hammered.
Yeah. Hey,
why would that be? And the reason is you've got somebody out there that is afraid they're going to get margin called. They don't have the money, and therefore they're going to start selling off other positions. Well, guess what? That hits all the equities and everything else.
Speaking of which, and we only have a minute or two here, but something we never talk about to our, you know, we probably should, Carl, but as we talk about stocks, which we do, stocks and jacks, and I want to get Carl's opinion on the market here, but as we do, stocks and jacks, also all kinds of other stuff is going on. And every given day, the currency markets are probably, 10 times bigger than the stock market, 8 times, something like that?
Oh, more than that. Bonds about 10. The currencies are like 50.
Well, okay. So in the last 2 weeks, the dollar has dropped 2.5, 3% against the euro. That's a year-long drop. That's not.
That's yeah. And the interesting thing is the largest element of that has been in the euro cross and in the yen cross.
Yes. Now, the pound has stayed pretty steady, but.
Yeah, I watch this very closely because it's a good indication of where things are actually moving.
Well, I guess I want to get to you quick. We don't have much time. I'm saying 2.5-3%. I wonder that's a number where you have to wonder if some banks wobbling.
Well, it's not just the thing. What's driving it is this basis crap that's across national boundaries, and we need to. I said at the time. The answer to this is you force every transaction onto an exchange where there's a counterparty in the center that has no financial interest in the trade, and they are not going to let you get away with this crap with the margin. It's not happening because it's their extinction if they do.
They tried to put those swaps on the exchanges, and it never happened.
I know, and you know what? Now you've got it with this so-called basis trade, which is another scam, and all the hedge funds and other entities that are involved in this crap, they all need to be thrown in jail.
But
this stuff has to be stopped.
But just the currency movement, and we're out of time here. But if you bought widgets from someplace, Switzerland, oh no, not Switzerland because they had a separate currency, from France, and you contracted X number of dollars per widget, your price is now up 3%.
Oh yeah, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. And if you have a 40% margin, I guess. You know, it's okay, but if you got a 5% margin, you got a problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff has 5% margin or 3 or 2. You know, if you're getting something over here, I mean, I know my stepfather worked for Walter Mark Watch and Hallmark Rings. They would buy all the movements of the watch from Switzerland,
right?
Which was 75% of the cost, and they had a factory here, which was an office building, and they had 10 people that basically stuck the movement in the case. So all the value added was in Switzerland. So right. if they got a 3% hit on the currency,
oh, they got pounded.
Yeah, you don't want your profit. So these are massive numbers, and not everybody hedges, and not everybody doesn't get caught. And all it takes is one person to get caught, one bank.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet, but. Keep your eye open, will you? So on Tuesday we talk about it.
Well, and by the way, there are people already out there running rumors that the Fed's going to bail all this basis trade crap out, which would be a $2 trillion whack instantly on the balance sheet.
Well, look what's happening to the gold. Everybody's, I mean, we've had our, by, I don't usually do this, but we've had far and away our best month for our clients. A lot of clients are in gold. Now, some people are in like XLV and things like that, or individual stocks, even though right. we've had puts. You know, we're down because you were down 100 delta puts. But in the gold, I was like 2 years early, Carl. But this thing's up almost 50%. And we've had stuff above the market. So the last 3 weeks, that's probably our biggest holding. By the way,
PPI just came out, neg one core.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that either. All right, Carl, take care of yourself, buddy. Have a nice weekend. Here, still skiing out west, but... probably too late for you to go, eh?
Oh, no, they shut it. It's the place I like to go is shut down.
All right, SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 27. We were up more back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
Yeah, no, they're done. Yeah. The place that shall not be named, they're done.